each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey everyone, welcome to The Winds of Change. Father Tom Coy's here with you. That means it's Wednesday, and that means... Indeed. My wonderful, adoring friends and fans have joined us here in this crowded studio with those throngs around me.
Wow.
Yes, and it is the hour...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It is the hour of brain wrinkling. No doubt about it today. My brain is wrinkling here just thinking of the topic because I shout out my flock notes and... I can't help but try to put two major themes that are floating around my brain lately. One is the Feast of Christ the King, which we just had. A wonderful feast indeed that it is. Trying to tell the world that Jesus Christ should rule over our hearts, our minds, that there should be a... It's not just all spiritual. I guess that's one thing to come out with, that there can and there should be a kind of government, a kind of administrative, a kind of practicality to our spirituality. That's what's behind the Feast of Corpus Christi. And I want to combine that with another thing that's been on my mind because they come together in a very brain-wrinkling way, and that would be the idea of heaven, heaven and eternity. I've been enjoying tremendously a book by Peter Kreft, one of his earlier works called Everything You Wanted to Know About Heaven. And I have to say... It's a deep philosophy book, so that it will wrinkle your brain in some way, and it may tempt you to throw it away. Some people like to throw books in the fire when they're frustrated or upset with them and they don't like them, like they did in Nazi Germany. They saw some books that were too Christian, I think, was part of the problem. Even though Germany tried to hold on to some kind of Christianity, but a very warped sense during the World War II times. Also, too, of course, we see that sort of spirit in the Middle East when Christians are forbidden to carry the Bible, or in North Korea, for that matter, and other such places. But anyways, I do not want you to have that attitude about a book, especially a good philosophy book, especially a good Catholic philosophy book. And the topic of eternity is something that can and should interest us all because we're all destined for that, aren't we? You know, and we're curious about it, and yet it's so hard to know what we're up against or what we're heading towards that it's very tempting to subjectivize it very quickly or to... Just dismiss it and just kind of wing it, or you just sort of, you hope for the best. Maybe that's what a lot of us do, right? We hope for the best. But this philosophical, scriptural approach to thinking of the subject gets us going. And I have some very challenging questions and thoughts that we're going to get to, because part of what the Bible teaches us about heaven is what is captured in the beautiful phrase, the wedding feast of the Lamb. And so there's something like marriage in heaven, but not exactly the kind of marriage that we know here. And it's more true to say that marriage in this world is an image of the true marriage in heaven, rather than the other way around, that we hope that in heaven there's going to be something like the real marriage that we know here. So often, the Bible speaks about the shadows that we find here in this world that are shadows of what is up in heaven. So I can't help but I got to share the beginning of my meditation here today with a puzzle. I'm going to call it a puzzle. A puzzle in my mind when I was reading the scripture readings for last Sunday, the Feast of Corpus Christi, because St. Paul, in the 15th chapter of Corinthians, uses the little phrase, first fruits. And he speaks about the resurrection, and this is what gets to the idea of eternity, right? He speaks about the resurrection. Jesus was the first fruits of the dead, the first fruits of the resurrection. Those who die, he's the first fruits of. And it's a very biblical-sounding passage, is it not? Wouldn't you agree with me? Oh, yeah. but what does that mean, you know? If we meditate a bit on first fruits, obviously you can think of how the Old Testament uses that phrase when we think of what? The tithe that people were supposed to give to the temple. People brought their first fruits to the temple and gave a portion of their first fruits. And it carries with it the sense of the best of your harvest. You didn't bring your smelly, old, bad vegetables. You brought your the best vegetables. And so, I told the people last Sunday in my church, we don't really, we're not following the Bible that way today, because we have something called money, and we pass a basket, and those who might throw vegetables in there, we're not going to be able to give them any tax credit for such things. Though there are still parts of the world where that happens quite a bit, you know, in very poor and rural agrarian parts of the world, it's not uncommon at all for someone to give the priest a chicken or a goat or some vegetables. But anyways, the idea of first fruits has more to do with the choicest goods more than it does stuff you find at the produce part of your favorite food store. So since the Feast of Corpus Christi came at the end of the weekend of Thanksgiving, I couldn't help but think of and share this analogy with my people, because meditating on what heaven is, what the resurrection is, and hearing the Bible tell us to think about first fruits, and here's me, how can I get people to understand what heaven is by talking about vegetables? And the Lord put into my little brain a different analogy that I think is better for our time today. That is, instead of the Bible saying Jesus is the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep, I'll change it to and see if this makes any difference in your appreciation of what the Bible's trying to teach us. What if we said, Jesus is the door buster of all door busters of those who have fallen asleep? We all know what door busters are, right? Door busters, you couldn't get through the Thanksgiving weekend without hearing something about door busters, and it's Matter of fact, I must confess, I was online and I clicked on a Black Friday special. Actually, I didn't buy it, but I did click on it. And maybe I will. I know I have in the past. But anyways, that's beside the point.
Oh, no!
No, that's right. I was that close.
Oh, no!
Well, I don't know if we should be sad about Black Door Busters. You know, you can get a pretty good deal on a door buster. That's actually a good thing. Except we have this sort of negative feeling about it because you feel a bit like the Jedi mind trick is being played on you, that you're a little gullible customer.
Don't let these visions come true, Master Yoda.
Yeah, here we see. Remember,
death is a natural part of life.
Oh, there's Mr. Yoda. Death was not a natural part of life at the beginning. It only came about because of the curse. Now see, but the idea of going into a store.
Let me see your identification.
Okay, yes. Now
we
know.
We don't need to see his identification.
We don't need to see his identification.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for.
No.
He can go about his business.
You can go about your business.
Move along.
Now we're gonna move this topic along because the Jedi mind trick is being played on all of us every day in different parts of life. Okay, my friends, beware. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to share this little tidbit from some of you probably know that us priests go through periodic evaluations. And I was just going through one of my periodic evaluations, and I had to... receive some of the feedback that was given, and it can be a little anxiety-producing when you're up against your evaluators, as it were. Thank the Lord, the wonderful people of St. James gave me nice stars, as well as pointing out important areas I need to improve in. And no one should really think there's no way to improve in their life. And it's very hard to change habits or start new ones, but we all have to try. So, but in the process of the talking with the chief psychologist, I'm going to share this little tidbit because he was explaining before we went into details. He said, oh, people are going to give you all sorts of comments from left field, from right field. They're going to be positive and negative. And he says, just soak them all in. Because it really doesn't matter where they're coming from. Just soak them in. And I had to say, I thought of, uh-oh, this man's trying to play the Jedi mind trick on me. I can feel it. I know, and I was resisting. See, a strong mind will not be pliable to the Jedi mind trick as it so often is, because it is obviously not true that different critiques or compliments are irrelevant to from where they're coming from. A lot depends on where they're coming from. We have that little phrase, consider the source. I think what he was trying to do is trying to encourage us to not dismiss certain negative comments right off the bat, to try to find some little kernel of truth, and that is a good thing. Like Plato used to say, the unexamined life is not worth living. So if you are ever up against evaluation of something, it is a humbling experience, and I don't know of any saints that were not humble. So it's a good thing to have a humble side that can take criticism and and get it. Oh, yeah, okay.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Well, I'm glad I did that. Yeah, very good. So, where was I leading up to this? I got sidetracked here. Well, it's time for our first break, and we're going to come back because I'm trying to connect the idea of the Feast of Christ the King and the idea of the first fruits with the idea of eternity And it will all come all together. Just stay with me, my friends, and your brain will be wrinkled even more. God bless you. Let's take a little quick break. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Winds of Change invites you to Our Lady of Guadalupe celebration on Sunday, December 10th from 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. Then, on Tuesday, December 12th, on the feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe, starting early at 5 a.m., Mañanitas, the serenading of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Then, at 7 p.m., there will be a special Mass in honor of the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Following the Mass, the celebration will continue in the St. Stanislaus Kostka School Gym at 1255 North Noble Street. There will be a folklore and Aztec dance presentation, as well as the presentation of the story of the apparitions of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And, of course, there'll be food for sale. Tamales, pozole, sopes, Mexican-style hot chocolate, and much, much more. The funds raised will benefit St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. That's Saturday, December 10th. St. Stan's is located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Join in our celebration of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Welcome to a St. Nicholas Minute. Why does St. Nicholas deliver gifts under the cover of night? Well, that tradition began in my hometown of Patara in Asia Minor when I came to the help of a destitute man who had 3 grown daughters. He was so poor that he could barely feed them. Because he was so desperate, he was tempted to sell them into slavery. Then I remembered the words of Jesus who said, "When you give to the poor, don't let your left hand know what the right hand is doing." And so I put together 3 bags of gold coins and tossed them through the window at night to help them. That was the first of my midnight visits. And that's the reason to this very day, even when I'm dressed as Santa Claus, I still deliver gifts under the cover of night. May the same love, joy, and peace that the angels proclaimed on that first Christmas animate your own heart to give hope to those most in need. For Christ is born. Glorify him.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, Adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coy is here with you. That means it's Wednesday, and that means it's brain wrinkling hour. And I mean to wrinkle your brain in a very severe way today, because I'm going to try to connect the idea of the Feast of Corpus Christi with the idea of eternity, and we're gonna meditate on time. How could you sort of get to the idea of eternity without wrestling with the topic of time? This is a very classic philosophical topic that must be dealt with. And so we're going to deal with this. We're just not going to push it over to the side and just say there's nothing we could learn and know more about. So, you know, would you, Nick, I'm going to have a little surprise for you. Would you like me to continue this special philosophical topic?
Gee, that'd be swell.
Do you remember who that might have been? The gee, who would be swell? I know this is a deep topic, so I figured I needed and I wanted to be able to stop your thinking process. You know how? Oh yeah, can you think? If you lived through the 70s and 80s, you might have known who gee that swell is. but probably not. So, do you want me just to tell you, Nick, is that what you're waiting for? Or you're just not wondering? Well, maybe this this will give you a little bit more, because philosophy and the topic of time is something that's confusing. And here's something else from this very famous flick that goes something like this, if you can remember.
Nervous?
Yes.
First time?
No, I've been nervous lots of times.
I think that's just a stitch. That's from Airplane. Every now and then when you... Sometimes at night when I want to relax and cool my brain down, because my brain does run very quickly and it gets crowded a lot. And so sometimes I need to erase my brain, something like a crowded blackboard. And so sometimes I'll watch something old, a movie I've seen before. An Airplane does it to me every time, because that's the star in the movie, the guy who eventually flies the airplane back down. He's sitting down, and the little old lady sitting next to him asks him, "Are you nervous?" He's obviously nervous looking. "First time," she thinks. She thinks, "First time flying?" He says, "No, I've been nervous many times." And that's a good little example of why philosophical discussion and philosophical thinking is important, because what a questioner may be saying, the words and the meaning behind the question of the questioner may be something much different than the words that the questionee is receiving from the questioner. Does that make any sense? I think it does. It should. St. Thomas Aquinas had the little phrase, we know you learn in the manner of the learner, you know, how we learn. And educational theorists know that all too well as well. So anyways, so here's the idea of the first fruits. I introduced the idea that the concept that we find in the scriptures that we heard on the feast of the Corpus Christi, and that meaning the first fruits. Jesus Christ is the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. That sounds really interesting, but what the heck does it mean? because first fruits, as far as I can tell, refers only to the best of your vegetables from your harvest. Not only just the best of your vegetables from your harvest, but the best of your vegetables that you're supposed to bring to the temple. Now, what that changes the meaning of those vegetables. And because the best that you produce is given away to God's work. And here's where the idea of doorbusters brings home this idea of first fruits, I think, better today. Because we all know what doorbusters are. You get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you drive to your favorite store, whether it be a Best Buy or a Walmart or Menards or something like that. You get in line, and if it's a really good and well-advertised sale, you get in line, you got to stand in line outside until the doors open. And the merchants and the managers who are really playing the game, who are really good at Jedi mind-tricking us, they say something like, "Only the first 100 people will get this great sale on on their TV." And so you want to get there, and then you count, there's 105 people in front of me. So when the door opens, what do you have to do? You have to run to the TV section faster than the ones in front of you so that you can be one of the 100 that get the best deal. Am I right in describing what a doorbuster is? I think I am. And though I must say, it only comes from watching it on the news. I'm patting myself on my back right now, because I did a very accurate job in describing what doorbusters are, though I question the sanity of those who who participate in them. Remember, you might say, oh, I know the managers are playing games with us. I know they're doing the Jedi mind trick. But if you know you're being played with the Jedi mind trick, then the Jedi mind trick isn't really working on you, is it? You're just interested in getting a good deal on a new TV or something of the sort. But that concept, imagine this, my friends, as we treasure the things we have earned, and the concept of a doorbuster captures the idea of first fruits because it's something that you worked hard for, you sacrificed for, and the idea of you getting what you went there for and then coming out of the store and then hearing a little angel whisper in your ear, now give that away. Give that to the poor. Give that to the church so that the church can sell it, make money, and do other things for God's kingdom here on earth. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. It almost hurts to think that you might have to do something like that. Is that not true? You go and you fight for your doorbuster prize or your win, and you got it fair and square because you did everything that you had to do. You got there early, you got there fast, and you ran past the others that were in front of you and all that kind of thing. So I guess that shows me what the... It starts to shed some light on what the concept of the first fruits is, because here's something precious that I'm giving away, and you can't give something away with that great of a sacrifice. You can't do it easily, and you won't ever do it unless you connect it to the idea you're giving it away for something better. I can give away a lot of things if I know I'm getting something better, or even that it's a fair trade, as we think. So the concept of heaven and the resurrection is worth giving away some really precious things in this world. Though that's why the concept of the disappearing concept of hell and purgatory, which are almost wiped out completely in so many religious people's minds, is really hurting our church and church attendance more than almost anything. You know, we always sit around and talk about how come people aren't going to church anymore, and we come up with all sorts of reasons. One of the main reasons that I always hear whenever that question comes up is people aren't in church because no one's inviting them. And that has a certain power to it. That has a certain goodness in it, because we all like to go to where we're invited. But I think a deeper sense, you could invite a whole lot of people. But unless there's a connection between what I'm doing on Sunday morning by going to church is connected to my eternal happiness, the sacrifice doesn't really seem worth it. And if you're not concentrating on the joys of heaven, the fear of hell might be there, or the fear of purgatory. There should be a fear, but like I say, so many people spiritualize heaven and eternity so much that it's a sort of just a given. Okay, so when we think of giving away your hard-won doorbuster big screen TV to the poor, we get that sense of, I don't really want to do that. But here's the kicker. The saints were all filled with doing things like that. I was reading about St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, who was one of our great American saints in the early colonial times. She was from a rich aristocratic family, if you could say there were such in colonial times, and there were. She is said to have... Oh, yes, I can't
hello
get
there,
away.
Hello there, everybody here.
Thank
Once
you.
Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous mate shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
Yeah, well, those colonial times, there's a lot of colonial times. St. Elizabeth Ann Seton was in the late 1700s, early 1800s. She revealed in one of her memoirs, or it's written in the life of her her life, that she danced with George Washington. She danced with George Washington. She was a very pretty girl. She was very rich. Her husband, unfortunately, dies. She meets a number of wonderful, faithful Catholics. She becomes Catholic. She starts a religious order. And what is she doing? She's begging for gifts, not for herself, but for the sick and the orphans that she was caring for. That gets to the spirit of the doorbuster giveaway. Once you win it, you give it away for something better. And now we're gonna turn then to eternity, and we're gonna borrow some great thoughts from Peter Kreft to put some more meat and wrinkle your brain more as we think about eternity and time, to unpack what it really means to be a child or a subject of Christ the King, who rules over us, okay? So stay tuned, my friends. I'm Father Tom Coyes, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
I'm Father Thomas Loya, and I'm inviting you to Christmas on the Prairie. Come and hear the story of the real St. Nicholas and take a ride with him in his own horse-drawn carriage.
Saturday evening, December 2nd, from 2 to 6 p.m., an indoor and outdoor family event. Experience the beauty of a Byzantine church, and homemade Christmas bake sale items are available. Christmas on the Prairie at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, 14610 Wilcook Road in Homer Glen, Illinois, Saturday, December 2nd, from 2 to 6 p.m.
Hey, welcome, everyone. God bless you for being with us. Father Tom Coyes here. I'm trying to connect the ideas of the Feast of Corpus Christi and the scriptural phrase of the first fruits with the idea of heaven and what eternity will be, because it touches on one of the fundamental problems I see in our church and in spirituality today. And if we meditate on time and eternity, I think you'll begin to see what I mean by where we've gone wrong and what needs to be corrected, as it were. So we're in the realm of philosophy and theology, and in such realms, we have to be very careful about definitions, right? We use words, and we need to stop and think about what they mean. Now, I got to share this again. This is another special little treat from one of my favorite movies. It goes something like this.
This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now. Tell the captain I must speak to him.
Certain.
Do you remember that one, Nick? I don't see that. It's, these people must be gotten to a hospital. And then the stewardess, oh, what is it? And she's referring, it is referring to the sickness that overcame the people. But the person talking, Leslie Nielsen in this instance, misinterprets the meaning of it. And when you do it, it can be very funny. But a lot of times when we do it in regular conversation, we don't know we're doing it. And sometimes it's not funny. It can be something, it be the cause of a great problem, as it were. So that's just my little way of saying, think before we talk. Analyze your words. Be philosophical so that you can be understood and accurate and not misunderstood. Okay? So the idea of time and eternity, we're going to go to something that the wonderful Catholic philosophy teacher, Peter Kreft, says. He talks about time. First, he speaks in his book, Everything You Wanted to Know About Heaven. He first speaks about a difference between just how you would think of space and place. Space and place, okay, you could say, yeah, it's the same, two different words for the same thing. And he wants to say, no, let's think of it a little deeper than that, because in understanding a difference, we'll begin to see a little bit more clearly what eternity is. And if you can capture what eternity is a little better, you'll better prepare yourself for heaven. Do I got it? Are you following me? So the difference between space and place, he talks about in terms of space meaning the quadrants on a map. Or you could say the GPS-located space. I could try, if I was really good at all those numbers from latitude and longitude, I could say, I'm going to describe a space for you. And I'm going to say it's 178 north and 24 south. I don't really know how these numbers coordinate, and I'm using strange numbers, but those who do use GPS and latitude and longitude would be able to fill in. But I could describe an exact space, but it would have no meaning to you that space has existed forever, you can say, or at least from the beginning of the earth until its ending. That space right there is very void of meaning. But let me do something else. Let me try to describe a place for you. And then I can go on and describe the place where my church is on top of a little hill. The hill used to be an island where French fur traders put a lookout post because they can oversee the forest, and it was good to see either enemy tribes or animals coming in. I'd be describing to you the acreage upon which St. James of the Sag Church is, or someone could describe their bedroom as a child, which has so much meaning to them. If it was a good childhood, a bad childhood, it still has a great deal of meaning. Or what about a husband and a wife and their bedroom and the meaning that has? That's the difference between space and place. Are you following me? So space is like, place is space charged with meaning. Okay, you got that? So that's a beautiful little distinction. And of course, when you talk about heaven, you talk about being able to travel about without having to get on an airplane or a bus or a car. And you can go to Paris and be in that place, or you can go to Rome and be in that place, or you can go to the village or the town you grew up in, etc. So trying to tackle the idea of time. He says it's a little bit similar to space and place, because time, we gotta shed the idea that the time in heaven, i.e. eternity, is not just unending time like we think about it in the here and now. There is there's a sort of a wisdom. There's an old nursery rhyme song Do you remember this? I wish I had a recording of it, but I don't. But it goes, the bear went over the mountain, the bear went over the mountain, the bear went over the mountain to see what he could see. But all that he could see, but all that he could see was the other side of the mountain, the other side of the mountain. I remember learning that when I was little. And people who love to dabble in philosophy are oftentimes resort to nursery rhymes, because many times nursery rhymes have great wisdom in them. That's what C.S. Lewis would and G.K. Chesterton would say in a heartbeat. And the meaning behind the little nursery rhyme, the bear goes over the mountain to see what he can see, but all that he could see was the other side of the mountain, is like there's sort of an eternal, endless return of the same. And heaven is not going to be just an eternal, endless, and eternal return of the same. It's not going over one mountain and you're going to experience the same thing over and over again. Even if what I had a great golf game, or I had a great honeymoon, or I had a great show that I was sang in, or something of the sort. And then you imagine heaven to be just a long string, an unending string of that kind of thing happening. The meaning of the song and the meaning of our faith, and it's trying to push us to meditate and understand what eternity is more, depends on the idea that it's not that. Eternity is not just unending time, which is that's one error. And there's another error that I call the Disneyland or Disney-ish wisdom. You could call it the immature wisdom, which is captured in the little phrase, enjoy the journey, not the destination. When you're thinking about a long time, or when you're thinking about eternity and what time means in heaven, you're not supposed to think of the destination. You're just supposed to think of the journey and enjoy the journey, not the destination. Kind of like commercials for airlines, right? It's not so much where you're going, it's the comfort and the enjoyment of the ride to get there. Obviously, the airline company wants you to think a lot about the journey there, because they don't care much about you after you depart the plane. But for you, after you depart the plane, the real work or the real fun starts. If you're on a business trip, you kind of do well in business, or if you're on a vacation, you enjoy the rest of the vacation. Not that the journey cannot be enjoyable, but it's Disney-ish or immature wisdom to think that is deep wisdom. Enjoy the journey, not the destination. There's a Elton John song that is in the middle of that famous children's story, A Lion King, where he sings, it's just the circle of life. It's after the daddy lion of the baby lion gets killed, and the baby lioness realizes that he's got to turn into his own self. He's got to be a lion in his own stand, not just the son of his father. And of course, a lot of people do go through that. But the song that is sung at that conjuncture of the movie, A Circle of Life, is very... The Disney-ish wisdom is not the wisdom of Christianity. G.K. Chesterton says at one point, if life is just a circle, it must be a vicious circle. Because you're just returning to the same, you're missing the concept of heaven. Am I getting there? C.S. Lewis in The Great Divorce says at one point, if this were true, what is this? The phrase, enjoy the journey, not the destination. If this phrase were true, and it were known to be true, how could anyone travel hopefully, for there would be nothing to hope for? See what he's driving at? He's trying to break a kind of a more immature vision. It's kind of like, oh, get on the train, because it's a really nice train, and they serve great food. And if don't ask, where's it going? could be taking you to hell and back, or it could be taking you to some place you don't want to go. So there is a tendency today to follow that Disney-ish wisdom instead of the wisdom that comes from the scriptures and from our Catholic faith. So let's follow Peter Kreft's thought process here a little bit. He's saying time in eternity, time in heaven, is a little bit analogous to the way that space and place are different. Heaven would be filled with lots of places, but space would not at all be the same. I could take you to a place in my memory. I could paint a picture with my words, but in heaven, I could take you there literally, and I could take you to that same space, and I could tell you that's where my living room was when I was a child, or my first year of marriage. But then I could say 100 years before that, that same space was the place where an Indian wigwam or an Indian longhouse stood, and the Indian chief who was slaughtered in a battle with their opposing tribe was killed. That space would take on different meaning as the place changes. And so we gotta come back and do the same philosophizing with the concept of time, shall we? Okay, so I'm Father Tom Coyes. Just going to be a short break, and we'll be right back. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Winds of Change invites you to Our Lady of Guadalupe celebration on Sunday, December 10th from 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. Then, on Tuesday, December 12th, on the feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe, starting early at 5 a.m., Mañanitas, the serenading of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Then, at 7 p.m., there will be a special Mass in honor of the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Following the Mass, the celebration will continue in the St. Stanislaus Kostka School Gym at 1255 North Noble Street. There will be a folklore and Aztec dance presentation, as well as the presentation of the story of the apparitions of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And of course, there'll be food for sale. Tamales, pozole, sopes, Mexican-style hot chocolate, and much, much more. The funds raised will benefit St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. That's Saturday, December 10th. St. Stan's is located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Join in our celebration of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, two blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I hope you're still with me because I'm floating in deep philosophical water, but it's so important for everyone to have a certain philosophical that leads to good theology. Oftentimes, bad theology is bad theology because it's founded on bad philosophy. Are you getting me? Are you following me? And I'm meditating on the idea of heaven. We just ended the liturgical year, and we're going to start to Advent, and the end of the liturgical year, all the readings are geared towards having us think about the end and our end and the end of life in the sense of the purpose of life being heaven. So I'm trying to share with you some beautiful insights from Peter Kreft about heaven and the concept of time in heaven, that it's not just unending time like we know it. Eternity is something much different and can and should be something we can look forward to experiencing in some new way that that we just can't imagine. But it has so much to do with our definition of things. And I'm going to share one more. It's one of my from a reason why good philosophy is necessary, because how easy it is to misunderstand people. If you remember the great comic hit Airplane, our good friend Leslie Nielsen says this.
Captain, how soon can you land?
I can't tell.
You can tell me. I'm a doctor.
No, I mean, I'm just not sure.
But can't you take a guess?
Well, not for another 2 hours.
You can't take a guess for another 2 hours?
No. I mean, we can't land for another 2 hours. Fog is...
Is that crazy or not? Were you able to hear that? I'm sorry for... I didn't have time to put it on my jump drive, which I usually give Nick the sharp audio man right there. But anyways, it was the other night. I needed some levity and that Airplane movie. See how he was misinterpreting the words? How soon can we land? I can't tell. You can tell me I'm a doctor, because doesn't a doctor often say that? You know, you can tell me anything, because we have this confidential, you know, like we'd like to tell doctors anything. They do have that priestly air about them, not that they take a vow of silence like a priest would for confession. That's part of our life. And anyways, so, but let us go back to the concept of eternity and think of this time. We all know, we all kind of think of time as the fourth dimension, right? We know what three dimensions are in this world: length, width, depth. All three-dimensional objects, those dimensions we're talking about, are length, width, and depth. Whether it's tiny this or tiny that, it still has length, width, and depth. And mathematically, we use the word point for an entity that has no length, width, or depth. On a blackboard, you put a point, even on your paper or whatever, still going to have some kind of length, width, and depth. But mathematically speaking, it's supposed to have no length, width, and depth. It's supposed to be a point is exactly that, not a thing without length, width, and depth. But we can then add the fourth dimension, meaning time, that this thing we see in front of us is passing through time in some way or another. So Peter Kreft throws out the idea, oh, well, then maybe time in heaven is like not the fourth dimension, but the fifth dimension, you know, and the fifth dimension, not like this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Wasn't that song by the Fifth Dimension, I think? That's going back a little before next time back. I think that was. The fifth dimension, you could say, there must be a sense of time beyond the time we have in this world, and we'll call it the fifth dimension. And Peter Kreft says, no, let's not call it the fifth dimension. If we're going to call it a dimension, it's the sixth dimension, because there are three dimensions in time, just like there would be three dimensions in space. And the first dimension of time is what we experience here by the ticking of the clock or the turning of the calendar page, pure and simple, void of human meaning. But then us humans can pass through time and give that time great meaning, right? Your life, my life, the years that God gave me, the years that God gave you, they're all different. We intersect, of course, but the beginning and the end are all different. And he's saying that there can be those kind of timelines in heaven that, again, we're going to be able to not only talk about, but we'll be able to live in a certain sense, to meet a great saint in heaven. That's why it's so crucial to the idea of heaven that you have in your mind the meeting of saints. Not just people you've known, Because how many saints do we really know? Hopefully we know some that are saintly people. But if your image of meeting people in heaven is just the people that you know on earth, you haven't got to the biblical and the Catholic idea of meeting people in heaven, because only saints are going to be walking around heaven. So what's the sixth dimension then? If you take the fifth dimension of all our timelines, yours, mine's, every person that's ever lived, the great and the small, the great we know that are famous, and the great we don't know. And in heaven, I'm quite sure that we will be able to meet and find a gazillion greats that we've never heard of. They were great in God's eyes, but they weren't great in anyone else's eyes, or that their greatness was undiscovered. One of the great works of the church is to discover great saints and to make them known as such. That's why we have the process of the canonization of the saints. And let's back up a little bit. Let's take a timeline of someone else, and you and not only be able to meet someone from days gone by, or meet your husband or wife, but you'll be able to go back and live. Let us say it's Abraham Lincoln, one of my favorite figures from history. And obviously, going into his life, I'm not only going to be able to hear what he has to say, but I'll be able to maybe sit with him in his room the night before he wrote the Emancipation Proclamation. And I'll say, hey, why don't you say it this way and that way? Or I could be so close to him, that kind of intimacy that is unthinkable in this world, but is possible in heaven. Okay, that timeline is being filled with meaning. Ah, but we have to put that timeline against someone else's sense of time, and that someone else's is God. So I could say, how is God going to evaluate that person's timeline? Because you can step back from, to use the analogy of Abraham Lincoln and the American Civil War a little bit more, for sure, there were some people who thought that Abraham Lincoln was a hero. And there were many who thought he was a tyrant, John Wilkes Booth being the chief example of such a person. So in heaven, are you going to be able to have a subjective, multicultural assessment of the meaning of life? Well, there'll be a part of heaven that praises Abraham Lincoln and part of heaven that condemns Abraham Lincoln. Whoa. Are you following me?
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
The answer is no, you can't split up heaven like that, because God is all in heaven. And it is God's assessment of our lives that will determine the unified, harmonious, joyful experience that we're going to call heaven or paradise. In eternity, that's the way we're going to have it. And so those kind of questions are powerful. So to jog people away from just thinking, I'm going to just meet my favorite person and live in my favorite place, and that's what heaven is. No, that's not a mature version. What if we say meeting your spouse? Okay, that's beautiful. What if you had two spouses? What if you were divorced and you really did love the first one, and now you're going to go back in heaven, and the obvious question is, there going to be marital relations in heaven? Well, you sure hope so. But then you're going to think, if you're both in heaven, who's going to be the first and the favorite one? That's the meaning behind that parable or the discussion between Jesus and the scribes and the Pharisees in the Gospels. We're going to have to come back to that one again, too, because there's a whole bunch of questions we can ask. God love you. God bless you for coming in and listening. I'm Father Tom Coase. You've been listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense. Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time.